Now, for a person living with a disability, accomplishing what seems like a small task can sometimes be very time-consuming. Meeting a work deadline or going out with friends for a quick bite to eat, these things might not always be doable.
Ellen Samuels has a rare genetic disease. She recently wrote about her struggle in Disability Studies Quarterly. She's an associate professor of gender and women's studies and English at UW-Madison and the author of Fantasies of Identification, Disability, Gender, Race. Ellen, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, your essay talks about living life in what you call crip time. Can you explain in your own words, what is crip time?
Well, crip time is kind of an in-group expression that some disabled people use amongst ourselves. And originally, it just meant being late. When you're disabled, there's a lot of reasons that you might be late, right? But in recent years, some of us have been talking about it more as this sense of when time becomes flexible, when time becomes what your body needs or what your mind needs instead of the time that the outside world tells you to have. And my friend Allison Kafer in her wonderful book, Feminist Queer Crip, says crip time is flex time, not just expanded, but exploded.
And you write that it can be, on the one hand, this beautiful thing and about giving your body the space, sort of for time to bend around what your body needs, but on the other hand, something that also holds grief and loss and alienation, all these things within it.
Yes, absolutely. That was what I wrote about in this essay. Is I said, I'm going to take a moment and talk about crip time in a different way than we've been talking about it, and talk about the ways it involves loss and brokenness. And that's not to contradict the ways that it's beautiful and forgiving, but that we have to hold both.
Can you tell us a little bit about what living your life, since it sounds like your 20s in what you call crip time, what it meant for you?
Well, I was in my 20s when I started to not be able to do the things other people my age could do. First, I couldn't use my hands. Then I couldn't walk. Then I was just very sick and in pain and losing weight, and no one knew why. And it took a long time after that. It took almost 15 years for them to discover that I had this rare genetic disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And really, I'd had it my whole life, but it was in my 20s that it began to really disrupt my life. And at that point, I felt that I moved out of the time of my peers and into a new time, a time when I often felt I had more in common with people in their 70s or 80s who were struggling to hold on to their independence, who were struggling with fatigue and pain the way that I was.
And you write really openly, really honestly about how you feel. And there's a story you tell about swimming in the warm water pool with some of these people who are in their 70s and their 80s. And at one point you say, really frankly, I hate them. Can you tell us what's going through your mind then?
I thought you might ask about that. That's probably the moment I was most nervous about publishing in this essay, when I said, you know, I go to the pool, in the warm water pool. Everyone else is much older than me. They frequently ask me, why are you here? What's wrong with you? And I tell them, and then they tell me about their lives. And I don't often admit this, but I hate them because they want me to be sympathetic about what they've lost. But what they've lost is what I lost decades and decades before, and they don't see it. And that, I say, is the privilege of not living in crip time. You've had a life of normal time. You've had a life of the stages we expect people to have, and I didn't have that. And I'll tell you, of all the, and this essay has had, I've been so touched by the response it's gotten. I did not expect it to get such a wide and public response. And people, strangers, are writing to me from all over the country. And that's the number one thing that they say, is they say, thank you, I hate them too, in some context or another.
So it's opening a conversation, it sounds like, that hasn't been said before. I've never heard people write like this before. We've interviewed many guests on this program, and no one has spoken quite, you know, in that raw, this is exactly what I'm feeling, this is my experience, and I'm just going to say it. Do you think that's opened some doors for honest conversations in a sense that we haven't had before, ever, maybe?
I think every time someone tells a truth that hasn't been told before, they find out that there's thousands of other people holding that same truth. And that's absolutely what's happened with this essay for me.
And in your essay, you take us back to the summer of 1995, when your medical, your genetic disease took a turn for the worse. Can you tell us a little bit about your disability and how you live day to day now?
Absolutely. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is a connective tissue disorder. It's caused by a defect in collagen, which is one of the main proteins that builds our bodies. And so it's in every system. So it affects every system. I often describe it as everything's too loose, everything's too weak. It's like a push puppet, if you know what those are, those dolls, and their joints are held together by string, and you push the bottom and they collapse. So my joints are like that. They're what medically it's called hypermobility. And so my body is working so hard all day to keep me together. Even when I'm just sitting here talking to you, my body is putting out the energy that a regular person's body puts out to run a marathon. And as a result, I get the injuries that athletes get. I get the injuries wrestlers get. I get the injuries that gymnasts get, but I get them just from turning over in bed.
We're talking right now with Ellen Samuels, an associate professor of gender and women's studies at UW-Madison. She's talking about her essay that describes how people with disabilities often accomplish tasks at a very different speed and experience the world around them very differently. And it's something that she and others call crip time. And Ellen, in your piece, you describe how you decided to pursue academia as a career. You thought, well, maybe I can't really work a 9-to-5 job like maybe I thought I could, so I'm going to go back to school, pursue a life as an academic. And you describe lying under the desks during the lectures to get through them, but also finding there, I mean, some joy and happiness at what you were doing, even though you say you were alone. Is that an example of what you've had to do to say, you know what, this is what my body needs, so this is what I'm going to do?
Right. It's really quite astonishing when you think about the wide range of people's abilities and needs that were so wedded to the 9-to-5, 40-hour-a-week schedule. And being in my 20s, I couldn't do those jobs anymore. I couldn't do things like waitressing, which is what I'd done to get through high school. And I thought, what can I do? I can read and I can write and I can teach people about reading and writing. I know how to do that. And when I went back to graduate school to do that, I discovered that even though I was still so different from my peers, I was still in a very different time from them, it was a time that I could make work. If I needed to write all night and sleep all day, I could do that.
And looking at the concept of time, I think that's one thing that really comes out into stark relief is the way, you know, time for someone who might not be struggling with a disability unfolds in this very linear way in general. And the body goes through predictable stages, as you said, getting to 70, 80 and starting to lose some of that mobility. And you've had to experience some of that sooner. And it's made you think about how you wish there were alternate versions of time. You wish you could kind of switch, like code switch back between different loops of time and experience things. In general, has it changed the way that you think about time and how it functions in your own life?
Thank you for that question. I think about this all the time. I didn't mean that as a pun, but I think about it every day when I I'm going through my day and I'm organizing it differently from other people. I work for an hour and I rest for an hour. Or maybe I work for an hour and I rest for the rest of the day. And I constantly have voices in my head saying, you're wasting time. And then I have another voice that says, no, this is my time. I'm living on crip time.
Do you think that time as we think of it has to, in a mainstream sense, for someone without a disability, do you think it has to unfold that way? Our society has to be structured that way? Or would there be a way to make it more flexible? Not just for you, but for everybody. Is there a way to be more like time sensitive? It's not a concept I've ever thought of before until I read your piece, but is there a way to make time a little more bendy to accommodate people?
There are already so many efforts to do that, I would say. I mean, just the concept of flex time, which we often think of as accommodating parents, but it just accommodates people with different kinds of bodies, different kind of minds, different ways that they care for themselves and care for others. And I think we need so much more of that. And I think the resistance to it is not a rational resistance, because I mean, I'm not an expert, but I think there's a lot of research showing flex time increases productivity and it increases morale. And, you know, recently I was listening to NPR and hearing about, you know, another study showing that teenagers do better if their school starts later, and yet no one is having their school start later. And it's because we have this weird morality about time. We think you have to work certain times in certain ways to be a good person or to be a productive person. But any of us can look around in our lives and see that's not true.
We're talking with Ellen Samuels. She's an associate professor of gender and women's studies and English at UW-Madison, talking about how people with disabilities experience time differently, accomplish tasks at a different speed often than the world around them. And it's something she calls crip time.
Do you identify with this concept? Are you living with a disability? Do you set aside more time to accomplish tasks through your day? Call in at 800-642-1234. And how has your workplace responded to your disability? How about family, friends, strangers? Do they understand what it takes to be you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation in a little bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation about living with a disability and the time and energy it takes to live in a world that's skewered toward people without disabilities. Ellen Samuels stays with us. She wrote an essay in Disability Studies Quarterly about this. She's an associate professor of gender and women's studies and English at UW-Madison.
You can join in and maybe talk about your experiences living with a disability at 800-642-1234. Do you relate to what Ellen says about what she calls crip time? What advice do you have for people who don't live with a disability to help them better understand what you're going through every day? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
And Ellen, you've written this essay, which you've gotten this tremendous response to. You are a writer, and now it sounds like you also have an outlet through poetry. And I know you brought a few poems in for us. Could you read a few and share those?
I'd be happy to. Thank you. So in the past year, I've been quite ill, and I've been spending a lot of time in medical testing, treatments, procedures. It has not left me the time to do the kind of intensive research writing I often do. So instead, I've started writing poetry in my head. I've been writing poetry for decades now, but these new poems, they're very short, and I actually write them in my head while I'm having medical procedures. And I have almost a whole book of them now. It's called Immobilities, and I'll just read three from that. Oh, I'll explain. A joint subluxation is when a joint partially dislocates and goes back in.
Okay.
The difference between joint subluxation and dislocation. Door unlatched in the body house. Shutter to slow kiss the jam or slam. Hmm. This next one is, I often injure myself while I'm asleep, and that's what this is about. Ankle sprain while sleeping. Warm swell of pain, foot knuckle bruising. What dance did you dream and forget? And the last one is about genetic testing for the genetic defect I have that causes Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Genetic testing for the COL5A1 mutation. One letter typed wrong. One plate chipped. Blood deep in you. One petal drifting.
Thank you for sharing those. Those are beautiful, and it also gives me a window, like the essay does, into what you're thinking and what life is like. Thinking about the dream dances that might injure a foot is something that you might not realize, and you've got it in poetry form there. And I want to take a caller now on this conversation. We've got Mark joining us in Green Bay. Mark, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. What do you want to share?
Well, I just wanted to ask your guest. The first time I guess I've really heard this topic discussed under this framework. I too have a chronic disability for many, many years, since I think 1995. Your guest said she was first diagnosed, and a lot of chronic fatigue and a lot of I've never used this word crip time, I guess, but it certainly rings true with my personal experience. One of the more large issues that I've dealt with is how to deal with the frustration and explaining that crip time to the outside world, because oftentimes, understandably so, people just don't relate with that concept. They see it as excuses, or in my case, I look relatively healthy, but there's some obvious physical disability if they're observant enough. And certainly a lot of chronic fatigue that come along that require you to kind of, frame your daily life around that, work life, personal life, things of this nature. I just wonder if she had any comments about that.
Great. Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate you calling up and sharing what your experience is, too. And Ellen, what advice do you have for Mark? He wants to know how to explain his sense of time, what you call crypt time, to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I really appreciate you asking this question, Mark. It's such a struggle for me and for so many of us with chronic illnesses, especially when they're not really apparent or visible. I have two suggestions. If it's someone in your life who you know who's willing to put in a little bit of time and thought, there's this wonderful essay called The Spoon Theory. By a woman named Christine Misurando. And if you just Google the spoon theory, it will come up, that talks about living with chronic illness as having only so many spoons. And once you run out of spoons, you're done for the day. And healthy people might have 20 spoons, but we only have 5. And maybe just showering and getting dressed and eating takes 3 of our spoons. If it's someone you don't know as well, someone who's not going to read this and start understanding it in that way, then I would say, don't make excuses. Don't apologize. Just say, this is what I can do and can't do. And some people will accept it. Some people will ask more and you can tell them about your experience. And some people won't. And I think one of the hardest lessons for us to learn is that's their problem. It's not ours.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for calling. And I hope that helps. And Ellen, do you see a future as you start to talk openly about this? Mark joins the conversation, more conversations start happening at a national level, where what you call crypt time is something that is understood, first of all, by everybody, and is made so you're not just the one flexing around the time, but other people are helping you.
I do. I am optimistic. I think there's still a lot of change that needs to be made and a lot of struggles, but I think it's something that joins us with other people, with working parents. I look at my students today and they give me so much optimism for the future. They're facing a difficult future, much more difficult than I faced at their age or than my parents faced. And they're so generous and hopeful and hardworking and sensitive to these issues. And so it does give me a lot of hope.
Ellen, thank you so much for coming into the studio. Really appreciate it today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Talking there with Ellen Samuels in studio, an associate professor of gender and women's studies and English at UW-Madison. She recently wrote an essay in Disability Studies Quarterly about getting by in a world designed for people who don't have disabilities and what her experience of time is like. She calls it crypt time.